Blog Talk Radio.
What up? Welcome to Sankofa Radio. We journey through the past where we stop here in the present on our way into the future. I'm your host, Scarry Donso, with my man, Sundiata Ray Vaughn. Today, we're going to pick up on the Alabama Prison Riot, Part 2. It's customary, though, before we start the show, we always start the show with a dedication. I want to give a shout-out to Sam Melville. Sam Melville was a prison organizer in the Attica riots. He had started a prison newsletter to help politicize the prisoners prior to the riot called the Ice Pig. And what essentially he was conveying in the paper was information about the state to the prisoners who may not otherwise been able to understand, you know, some of the circumstances that they were facing. You know, he helped to better articulate it in a way they could understand exactly what was the motive of the state and the way that they went about oppressing them. So shout out to Sam Melville and all the brothers at the Attica riots and riots through all prison history, man, who have rebelled and uprised, you know, just fighting, man, trying to get their human dignity. So is my man Sundiata on? We'll be looking for him in a second. He'll pop up. In the meantime, we discussed last time a little bit about the criminalization of blackness. And we talked a little bit to give an overview about what is the role of the prison in the society that we live in capitalist America. We talked a little bit about the criminal, who is the criminal in America, and we discussed the criminalization of blackness and how it is that black bodies have been subject to the whims of the dominant culture since the origin of this country, whether it's been through indentured servitude, chattel slavery, peonage, now the unemployables get locked up and they profit off our backs in the prisons. We also talked a little bit about the connection between other prison riots or prison rebellions, as I would prefer to call them, and uprisings. Most recently in Natchez, Mississippi, we talked about Newcastle, Indiana, Attica, a little bit about New Mexico. And so we were making the connection between why it is that oppressed people rebel, what group of people get targeted for specific types of oppression, and how it is that the power structure tries to frame these uprisings and rebellions in a way that helps them advance their interests. And one of the things we talked about that, and
peace,
how it is that you just turn overcrowding. Okay, my man, good to see you, bro. I was just going in a little bit about, I'm doing all right, black man. I was going in a little bit about just giving an overview of the last talk I did Thursday on the Alabama prison riot. And I was just talking a little bit about how the power structure uses the media to try to frame prison uprisings in a certain way so that they can ultimately advance their own interests.
Right.
In conclusion, so one of the main things you gonna hear when you see a prison riot as to the cause of it that's constant, that's always in the backdrop, is overcrowding. And the reason why that you always hear about overcrowding prison riot is because it's always in the interest of the capitalists who profit off prisoners in so many different ways to build and modernize prisons so that they can imprison more people. And this has been at the root cause of what we call mass incarceration today. The fact that to house people in these prisons is profitable, and to keep them on the street, the unemployables, as Huey calls us, those who can't contribute to the modern global economy, is threatening to the power structure, is threatening to the wealthy class. So that's where I was going early, just overviewing what I talked about. And so I'm gonna bring you into the conversation, man, by asking you a question. So the question I want to ask you is, man, could you kind of outline maybe some of the prison conditions you faced that may have caused you to feel the resentment, the bitterness that you may have felt while in prison? And what, from your experience, what could cause a prison riot or cause dudes to want to riot while in the prison? And please make sure that people know it's typically not overcrowded, man.
It's typically not overcrowded?
No, it's not overcrowding that one makes people. It's not this idea that overcrowding makes people want
to. Right. No, that's not it at all. I mean, that's one of the factors that could lead to it. But some of the conditions that I faced was primarily abuse and mistreatment from officers, the abuse of authority, the abuse of power, the blatant disrespect, the racial disrespect, the racism in prisons, especially the further you get away from your home, your hometown or the city, when you go further out into these rural areas, these mountain areas, when you're dealing with these hillbilly rednecks, excuse my terminology, but that's the only way I can properly describe them, who chew tobacco, call you boy, call you nigger, kick on your door, refuse to give you the proper things that you need, far as maybe a request form that you may need to ascertain where your mail is, to dispose of your mail illegally, retaliate, use corporal punishment, all these things, you know, the blatant, the intense oppression, the obstruction of your basic human rights. You know, you may need toilet paper, and they will just blatantly ignore you. Don't give you toilet paper, soap maybe. Won't give you no soap. You know, and these things can create animosity and attention and the anger, man, that's so potent that it can, cause an explosion. It can cause a riot, you know, because, and then when you utilize in the Department of Correction, they have the grieving procedure, which you grieve all complaints and all that occur that you feel needs to be addressed. It needs justice. And when you do this, they will retaliate against you. They will call you snitch. They can put labels on you. They can endanger you in the prison. I've seen them even pay other prisoners to physically attack a person who chooses to utilize the grieving procedure, who may have some skills in law, who may, file a lawsuit against a certain correctional officer, and they have pay another prisoner to attack that man. You know, and these things can create a riot. It creates that us against them mentality, you know. And so I can even imagine, they say at this prison in Alabama that there was only 17 guards working, and it was 991 prisoners. And this prison holds up to 663? The prison was made for 637 prisoners, man. You know, and it was exceeded that to 991. So you got all these guys. So I can imagine they're going to need to go to chow hall, but they don't have the proper security to allow these guys to go to the dining hall. They don't have the proper security to allow these guys to go get their commissary, to allow these guys to go to the showers. They probably always saying the security issue, y'all on lockdown. These guys probably stayed in the cell. And I can imagine how much that created, you know, this intense buildup of resentment and rage, because they can't get the things that they humanly need, you know, on a basic level. And,
what oftentimes is overlooked about the prison environment is how much they invest in security and how much they don't invest in treatment and education. Dealing with now is a philosophical thing, because you have a group of people who don't believe that certain people can contribute to the society. And it goes back to what we talked about in part one, who gets criminalized and who gets targeted. In Alabama, I know that, you know, it's one of the poorest states in the country, and schools down there, like here in Virginia, are facing budget crises all throughout the state in many different locations. Yet they're already talking about in Alabama spending $800 million to build four new prisons. You know what I'm saying? So this goes back to what I was saying about the use, with the use of overcrowding as a way to advance their interests. Now, 20 years ago in Virginia, here, there was a prison riot at Buckingham Prison. Four people were shot. The warden was stabbed. It's the 20th anniversary of the Buckingham Prison Riot, and that prison riot was caused for two major incidents, one being that the warden had refused the guy the opportunity to go visit his mother's wake when she had just passed, and the other issue was that the law library, guys who were filing lawsuits were being excluded to being allowed into the law library. This caused tensions in the prison, which ultimately led to brothers burning down the law library, burning up the gym. The warden was stabbed. Four prisoners were shot. Now, from the outside looking in, you know, people would say, well, you know, why are these guys, you know, they're locked up and they broke the law, and why are these guys? And so the question we got to ask ourselves is, like before, what produces the criminal? What conditions in society produce the criminal? Because we're not born criminals. Criminality is a social construct. We're made criminals by, one, our inability a lot of times to be able to participate in the economy, and two, by those who create the law themselves, who determine what is legal and illegal. So the question I want to ask you, bro, with that in mind, is why is it that you think people are allowed to, why is it that you think people are allowed to frame prison riots in a certain way?
Because they have access to the media. You know, they say the might of right. Those who have the most might can exert what they say is right. And so being that they have, you know, more power, they're in a position of more power, they're in a position where they make the laws, they have access more to media, and the media in turn is still a biased form that, that manipulates the mind for this particular agenda of a power group or those who have something in common. And so what we see is that these corporate entities, because we know that prison is a big billion-dollar business, you know, they will use these things to justify why people need to stay in prison. You know, why these guys, they can justify, oh, you know, these guys are violent offenders. It was overcrowded. That's the only reason, because they are in that position where they can do it. And being branded and labeled as a felon or a criminal, that automatically reduces or minimizes the credibility of this said person being afflicted with the oppression in the prison. So we're being discredited, you know, off the jump due to the leverage that they have, you know. They have the accessibility, and being that they do, they go ahead and manipulate the mind and form the minds of the society, of citizens in society, that these are the reasons, this is what happened, instead of getting to the root core. They know the root core, but they're not going to try to change it, because the root core has been so lucrative to them. You know, like you say, if a person doesn't have the proper education, so if it all goes back to education and everybody was given, you know, was given vocational training and given a proper neighborhood or environment where they can really bloom and blossom without all the hindrances and impediments that may distract them, you know, then everybody would have an equal opportunity in the workforce. But if you have a certain group of people, a concentrated group of people that is from history been targeted, remain in this dilapidated area, given a second-class bootleg education with old, outdated books and old beat-down schools is on top of landfills, you know, bombarded with drugs and liquor and alcohol and criminalized by the police. Their mentality already is in a distracted, frustrated state when they even enter school. Not to mention, they're not even being taught about their own history, but somebody else's manipulated stories, falsehood stories about Europeans and Eurocentric achievements. So they already have been beat down before the battle even started, for real. You know what I'm saying? So basically what they're doing is actually creating criminals. You know, they're actually creating criminals. They're paying a criminal for how they made them. I mean, they're paying the officials, the state, all this is the money off of what they created. And they're sentencing people for what they created. So, and it's deep.
I think that's correct, man. And I think, you know, what the people need to know about the Virginia prison industrial complex, and that's what it is. It's a powder keg. I'm around brothers on a daily basis who are frustrated. You know what I'm saying? You got truth and sentencing laws, man. It's locking dudes up. You're throwing away the key. You got just these wild paternalistic nonsensical policies, man. They got a policy in Virginia, man, that they don't allow you grow your hair beyond 5 inches, man. They got a policy in Virginia, man, that don't allow you to get a visitation with somebody outside of your immediate family, you know, if they visit somebody else. And what's crazy is the black family, you know, why that's oppressive, particularly towards the African, American African, is because the black family, going back to slavery, has always been an extended family. You know, the grandmother,
right.
the auntie has always been, you know, instrumental in raising
right.
the child, you know what I'm saying, because of, you know, the conditions of slavery and so forth and so on, same through Jim Crow. And even today with the drug wars, crack cocaine, heroin has just helped to break up the family, mass incarceration. So we know that grandma is mom a lot of time for dudes. And so because my grandma comes see me, she can't see my cousin, even though me and my cousin like brothers, that's oppressive towards us. This is not typical conditions that white Asians and Hispanic people face. And so it's another discriminatory policy that's subtle. You know what I'm saying? The food. You know, they're killing us through the food. Go to Virginia's for better nutrition and get a better understanding of that, how they're killing us through the food. So oppressive conditions, man, is happening on a daily basis. You got the Prison Litigation Reform Act. They're blocking brothers from exercising their First Amendment right to be able to challenge, to get better prison conditions, thanks to Bill Clinton, the orchestrator,
right, exactly.
the architect of mass incarceration. Right, right.
No
you
doubt.
Feel me? So what people need to know is that it's not a bunch of rebel rousers who just trying to criminal mischief, who trying to cause trouble, but it's actually brothers who are trying to fight for their human rights and trying to just, you know, exercise the credo of the Declaration of Independence. I mean, you know, the white boy said that when the government becomes destructive upon its means, you know, it's the duty of the people to abolish that government. So when we starting to get our human rights and our American citizenship rights assaulted in a way to where we being reduced to chattel slaves, of course, the Declaration of Independence, you know what I'm saying? It's our duty to uprise and rebel, you know what I'm saying? And that's what I think is never framed in that way, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
To add on to what you're saying,
also to ask you a question, Thomas Jefferson, who is a renowned president, you know, according to American history and a lot of Americans, Thomas Jefferson said he thinks there should be a revolution every generation in America. So
that's what he said.
Why would this guy, yeah, that's what the man said. Why would he even say something like that? Because he knew, or maybe he had some type of intuition or foresight that the government would become oppressive in its policies. And, you know, when you have a group of selected individuals with the ability to make laws, pass laws, and have access to the money, that they can become corrupt or they can use the law for their own benefit and against a group of people. And so you say you thought it should be one every generation, you know, to change it up, to keep it balanced. And what we're seeing today is really an effect, you know, a negative or adverse effect of, you know, selected individuals having access, that's not unlimited access to power, a small group, you know, and they're using it against us. When I say us, I'm talking about the original people, you know, the black man, woman, and child. And but to ask you, you know, they say that this prison in Alabama was built in the 1960s, right, as a result of massive lawsuits, you know, in numerous states, and it was meant to be a model of advancement in the prison. So basically what we're seeing really is a full circle again of this prison model. Right, because they were saying in the 60s, you know, the prison conditions were so terrible, you know, that guys started to, you know, riot in the 60s. They started to push paperwork, you know, lawsuits and things. And this was a response to those lawsuits being pushed. They came with this new massive prison, because back in the 60s, this was like, that prison was a state-of-the-art prison. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
And so here we go again, 2016, the same thing going on. Prison conditions deteriorated, prison become overcrowded, prisons being abused, mistreated, and here's another response. So now they're about to build four more so-called state-of-the-art prisons, $800 million, close to a billion, might as well say $1 billion. Why do we keep seeing this cycle? You know, what is the cause of this cycle? You know, and can we find some other alternative to where we can have, instead of a cycle, a straight linear progressive line, you know, towards something better?
A couple important points, man. First of all, Thomas Jefferson also was a slave breeder, right? And that's important to note in context of what we're talking about, because at the time, when Thomas Jefferson was making all of these, was doing all of this pondering on his big Monticello plantation out here in Charlottesville, he had hundreds of slaves running around the plantation. Now, while that was a threat to him, right, was because the Haitian Revolution had just taken place, and a lot of them white boys were scared to death. They were starting to feel like, okay, we got a whole lot of blacks running around here, and what happened in Haiti can happen to us any day. So they started to begin to look and see a threat. See, being black in America beginning in the 1600s already was a crime. So, you know, blackness has always been criminalized in this country, right? So now you got guys looking at these slaves saying, well, look, man, you know, they may become a threat, and we got to figure out how it is that we can maintain and control them. Now, at this time, because of the institution of slavery, punishment happened on the plantation, right, which is what all prison is an institutional punishment. But the punishment took place on the plantation. So there was really no need at the time for the prison. But Thomas Jefferson, if you look at his notes on Virginia, he already was beginning to conjure up ideas of the plantation for black people because he realized that the time was going to come where blacks were going to have to be managed. Now, let's fast forward to 1876, a case called Ruffin v. Commonwealth. Now, in Ruffin v. Commonwealth, what you have is a guy who's being convict leased, okay, right here in Virginia. He's being convict leased, and he gets sent out to work on a railroad for a railroad company, but he ends up killing the guard and trying to escape, but he's not in the prison. And so what ends up happening is he files a habeas corpus because he's like, yo, they gave him an escape charge. He's like, yo, I didn't escape because I was already outside the prison. And what the court says is, you being a prisoner are a slave to the state because of the 13th Amendment. 13th Amendment says you're a slave to the state. You can't even file no habeas corpus because you're a slave. Okay, and this begins a doctrine within the court system called the hands-off doctrine. So you got from 1876 going all the way up to the 1860s, can't even file lawsuits. But now, because we're considered slaves of the state, but now what you end up having is in the 1960s, you have movements in society. You have civil rights movement, black power movement, all these different movements, and you also got a movement in the prison. You got George. You got all other black Muslim movements in New York. You got California with George and them. You got a lot going on. So courts begin, as a reform tactic to slow some of this down, they begin to open up the courts to the prisoners. Okay? And these are the lawsuits you're talking about. All right? Okay. Now, these lawsuits you're talking about are now starting to make them call into question prison conditions, because back then prisons might eat one meal a day. That was constitutional. They were slaves. Prisons might be housed in segregation without any due process. It's constitutional. They're slaves. You know what I'm saying? Prisons might get beaten. You know what I'm saying? When they violate a certain rule, it was constitutional. You know what I'm saying? Because they were slaves. So all of this is beginning to be challenged in the 60s, and this is supposed to be the new reform of the prison movement. And it's happening because of what's going on in society as a whole. It's not happening because the power structure is just all of a sudden getting this moral consciousness. Okay, it's happening because people are resisting. It's the result of resistance. So what happens is from the 60s, you see the conservative fascist movement, which I like to call it, already beginning, the neoconservative movement, Reagan, Goldwater and the boys, Nixon and the boys, already starting to think about ways that they can resist the resistance, a counter-resistance. So they say, well, we need to run elections, and we need to empower the United States Supreme Court so that we can take back some of the successes that the civil rights and black power movement had and the prisoners' rights movement have gained. So this is what you see from the late 60s, early 70s, all the way up until now. You see a Supreme Court that was shaped specifically to take away all of the successes of the civil rights, black power, prisoner rights, gay rights, all of these women's rights, all of these movements are being assaulted because that's been the plan of the conservative movement. You have now in dialectical analysis, you always have two contradicting forces. And so you're going to always have, in capitalist society, a force that's whole motive is profit and purely profit, and they feel like there are going to be some people in this society who just ain't going to be able to participate, and those people who aren't good enough, you know what I'm saying, the inferior class, blacks have been relegated to that class, whatever happens to them happens to them. You know, it's social Darwinism. So you're going to always see these cycles of oppression. You always see these cycles where the power structure is always trying to secure their profits by any means necessary. This is why Brother Malcolm said we have to resist the same way by any means necessary. So now we come into a new cycle where people, because of income inequality and the desperate conditions, the black middle class who have been bamboozled for a long time, in the 90s, they even supported Clinton with the development of mass incarceration because of the violence that was taking place throughout the early 90s. But this was, again, the result of, you know, drugs, guns, poverty. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But the black middle class couldn't see that because they were so far removed from them conditions. So they helped Bill Clinton support. They supported Bill Clinton as he built this. Well, now as the black middle class and the white middle class are becoming increasingly poor, you know, now, you know, they have an interest in what's going on with criminal justice, being that the criminal justice system is designed specifically to lock up the poor. So now there's another movement. We got Black Lives Matter. We got these anti-mass incarceration movements happening all over these different states. And this is where we are. We're in a new cycle. But what people have to understand is that there has to be a complete reform of the society itself. We have to begin to imagine, you know, alternative methods to punishing people who we consider to be the criminals. We got to reexamine who is the criminal. We got to reexamine who are the ones making the laws. Who entitles them to make the law? We got to have more compassion. And so I think when you look at a prison rebellion, you have to look at that in the same light that you would look at a slave rebellion.
Yeah.
You know, you have to see a slave rebellion and a prison rebellion as being one and the same. You have to see that in the same way you would see a race riot in 1919, or the same way that you would see a riot in Watts in 1964. You know, all of these things are the result of massive oppression. Racial oppression, you know what I'm saying? And so when you begin to look at it like that, understanding that everybody that I just named was a criminal in some form, they was being criminalized in some form, whether it was in Chicago 1919, whether it was in Newark or Chicago or Detroit in the 60s, or whether it was on a plantation where slaves were being criminalized by the mere fact that they was born, you know what I'm saying, that they was born to a slave mother, you know what I'm saying? Now it's the same thing happening now with the drug wars, brothers being criminalized and put into these new modern plantations. It's all the same thing. And when you understand it from that perspective, you begin to realize it's the result of the dialectical process. So this is why you had those cycles. I hope that answers your question. This is why you had those cycles. It's important to understand, again, that this dude Thomas Jefferson, who was a slave breeder, right, always had an interest and always was being thought out and thoughtful and meticulous in his way of trying to figure out how can we manage black life better. You know, he's a racist, slave breeding, baby killer, rapist. You know what I'm saying? No matter how they try to frame him, this is who this guy was. You know, he ain't my forefather. But yo, let me ask you this, right? So when you was at Wallace Ridge, you know what I'm saying? What were some of the things that you witnessed, man, that people may not understand as far as oppression, man, that could lead to an uprising?
I tell you, my second week on Wallace Ridge, I was in maximum security segregation. They was coming around. They feed you, and they feed you through a chuck hole, which is they open this little slot that's on the door, give you your food tray. And they give you your food tray. You know, you have a certain amount of time to eat, 15 minutes. When they come collect the tray, they have a trash can. They used to have a guard. You know, you throw your food in the tray. You know, the trash can was leveled to the tray slot. So I threw my food, and, you know, I was a vegetarian at the time, so I had got these beans, and pinto beans had a lot of, you know, juice and water in it from the beans, you know, when they were cooked or whatever. In the trash that was on the tray, the officer said, man, some bean juice got on my...
True, son, we got 60 seconds, True, son. We got 60 seconds.
Oh, yeah, well, anyway, you know, I was charged with throwing bean juice on this guard, and I was put on an ambulatory strap-down bed for 24 hours, you
oppressed.
Know, strapped down, oppressed.
That's great.
You know,
that's
something
great.
Not even
that's
to do
great.
It intentionally. You know?
No doubt. Oh, no doubt. Oppression breeds resistance. Look, man, free all political prisoners, Virginia prisoners for racial justice, Facebook, Virginia prisoners for Virginia citizens for nutrition, Facebook, Yahuru. Anything you want to say, bro?
Please check out Virginia Prisons for Better Nutrition. Go on, log your name in, try to get in contact with the senator to get these laws changed. These guys are eating this processed meat, causing cancer. Go down there to your local senators. Try to get these frogs changed.
That's right.
Love,
man. Freedom ain't free. Yahuru. Tune in next week. Love you, bro.
Love you, too. One love. Peace. Stay fighting.